You are listening to the Flight Test Podcast, Episode 5.
This episode is brought to you by our good friends at HiTech. Visit them at hitechrcd.com.
Welcome to the Flight Test Podcast. Flight Test is all about educating, entertaining, and elevating the world of flight. If you like radio control planes, helis, FPV flying, multi-rotors, or scratch building, this podcast was made just for you.
All right, everyone. Welcome to podcast episode 5 from Flight Test. My name is Austin Fury. I have three other awesome guys here for this podcast.
You said awesome. That's funny. You're really stretching it, brother. One awesome other guy.
A couple other awesome guys. I'm going to let them introduce themselves,
Do the most important one first.
There you go.
All right, Chris.
Hi, I'm Chris Roncaglione. I don't know if you want to call me a flight test stalker or super fan or...
I love this man, guys. He is amazing. He's been around since when?
Not quite day one, but probably like a month or so afterwards.
Crazy close.
Day 30.
Day 30, yeah.
Carry on, I interrupted you.
Oh, no. And for some reason, I keep hanging around here. It's just too much fun.
With the greatest honor of being on the Flight Test Podcast.
Yes. Honestly, very excited.
Guys, I'll be honest. Chris is incredibly humble and kind. He's one of the most talented individuals I know. He flies full scale. He flew full scale, right?
Yes.
What rating did he have?
Commercial instrument.
He's raced
motocross.
He's an all-around talented guy. I don't think there's anything this guy can't do, but he's so humble you don't find out until it comes out, and you have to drag it out of him. So dear friend of Flight Test.
Before we get too far,
yeah.
Who are you, man that's talking?
Man that's talking. My name is Josh Bixler. I'm the one with the highest voice out of all of Flight Test.
Perfect. And who else is here?
Hello!
That's the sweet.
David Vendestahl.
Yeah.
You just made everyone's speakers pop.
I hope so. We actually have a new soundboard, so I'm watching the levels at the moment and geeking out a bit. Yeah,
Dave's not letting me get closer to the
microphone. No, you sit back. Sit back.
Yeah, thanks to all the support from the Flight Test community and from a new sponsor for this podcast. By the way, this podcast is sponsored by HiTech.
Yeah.
So we want to thank them for sponsoring this podcast. Because the podcast is growing and our listenership and subscribership is growing, we actually have 4 very nice microphones, which we'll probably take a picture of for the show notes.
Yeah. Thank you, guys, and thank you, HiTech. You guys are making this happen.
Which, speaking of show notes, I've said this before in other podcasts, but in the upper right-hand corner of flighttest.com, you can click the podcast icon, and that'll take you to all the latest show notes, and this one is episode 5. So if we mention any links for this podcast, or if we mention anything special around the web, and you just want an easy way to navigate to that, just go to the upper right-hand corner of flighttest.com and click podcast, and then click episode 5. So thank you so much for listening.
Since we brought Chris on here, we thought we can ask you... How do you get into the hobby? How do you start?
I was just kind of bored one day. It was a weekend. My son was about, I don't know, maybe 1. And I thought, you know what? Let's go to the hobby shop. Went to the local hobby shop, walked in there and said, I want an airplane. You know, sell me an airplane. So they sold me, I think it was, one of the Hobby Zone planes. Like, I think the J3 Cub.
Oh, okay.
And, being the way I am and that I flew real planes in full scale, I thought, this is going to be easy. I know exactly what to do.
Famous last words, huh?
Needless to say, like, the first time didn't last, like, even a minute. It was just, like, into the ground. I'm like, well, that didn't work out very well. You know, and like Chad says, I was devastated. I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know, what do I do now? Well, I got to fix this, you know. So that's how it started, and it just it was a learning process. I didn't know anything. You know, luckily the internet wasn't around. I was on forums trying to figure stuff out. You know, how do you fix this? What does this do? But it was very challenging. Matter of fact, I actually quit for a little while. Got into cars and was into nitro, electric, and then I got in the fifth scale gas cars.
Ooh, expensive stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's finally I was like, you know, I'm done with this. I want to get back to the airplanes. And so.
Did you find your experience with the cars, learn left, right, going towards you, really helped you out a lot? Or?
No. The cars were, I don't know, were really easy for me to drive. And, you know, but the thing I didn't like about the cars was you almost worked on them more than you drove them.
And it cost
and
it, more.
Yes. And with the fifth scale, every time you drove the fifth scale car, it was $100.
Oh,
I mean, because something would break. And to buy parts for a fifth scale, you know, $80, $100.
And you can't just fabricate your own unless you have a full-blown machine shop.
Exactly. So I met a guy, actually he's a really dear friend of mine now, Pat Humbert. I was out flying my Super Cub one day, and I met him out there. He had one, and we got to talking. And I looked at his airplane, and this thing was just full of glue and full of packing tape. And I'm like, how is this plane even flying? You know, here's mine all pristine. I was afraid to get a scratch on or a dent in the foam. I'd freak out, you know. And this guy's just going to town. I'm like, this is awesome, you know. And he really changed things around for me. And he would push the limits. I mean, he was just beginning too, but he kept pushing the limits. And he'd just have fun. He'd crash and he'd laugh. And we'd get the tape out, you know, and he'd chuck it back in the air. And I was like, this is fun.
Nice.
You know, and it just turned out like every weekend we were out there Saturday and Sunday morning, every weekend just flying and just having a good time.
Nice.
So
when did you find flight test in that then?
Again, my good friend Pat, we were over at his house one day and he pulled up YouTube or something and he had your first video that you did with the Wildcat. And he goes, hey, look at these guys. And we watched the whole video and I was like, you know, that's something we talked about that would be, you know, awesome to do, but we didn't know where to begin or how to do it or anything. And he goes, these guys are in Navarre. And I'm like, there's no way. Are you kidding me? They're right down the road. He goes, we got to get a hold of these guys. So I talked to Chad a little bit through, I think it was RC Groups. We got, you know, talking a little bit. And he says, hey, come on down. We're shooting. Just come on down and hang out. So we did. And you guys shot, and then I think we all flew afterwards and hung out, right?
I think it was a Spitfire episode. Or was it the DX8? Because we were flying something.
It was the...
Oh, the Quicksilver.
Yes.
Quicksilver, right.
The Quicksilver, yes.
Yeah, they you guys are great. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I know I was talking to somebody, and I went and bought the DX8 from Aerotech to do the DX8 review.
Yes.
Was that you that was going to Aerotech to be the DX8 buyer?
Yes.
That was?
Yes.
Sorry
about that. I went in there to get that, and it was gone. I'm like, it was just here, and then found out later. Yeah, that was
funny. I sniped
funny.
It from him.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, actually, I met you. What episode was that?
Oh, my gosh. It was so long ago.
Yeah, it was. I think it was the bomb drop or something. I had the Spitfire. Or was it before that? It was crazy. But you were always in the background, like, helping out.
Yeah, that's kind of like, you know, I try to stay off camera. Josh, I have done a few challenges, you know, mm-hmm. episodes, which was a lot of fun. But
oh, yeah, the Fokker and
the SE-5. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Then we did the vertical drag race.
Yes.
And then we, you know, had our battle after. That was great.
You beat me in that one.
Barely.
It was fun, though.
So, you know, I like to hang out in the background. I fix stuff and whatever needs to be done, I try to help out.
We appreciate it a lot.
Yeah.
It helps.
It's just so much fun. I could have the worst day and show up for a shoot and hang out with you guys and I go home and I'm just smiling from ear to ear. It's great.
Well, and you have a wonderful, I got to meet your wife and family too. You got a wonderful wife and family.
Thank you.
Very kind people.
And for those of you that haven't seen super early flight test episodes such as the vertical drag race, I will link those up in the show notes. So if you want to go back and see who Chris is and see him in an episode, you can just check out the show notes.
Very cool.
Okay, so we thought we would talk about a little bit of our stupid mistakes when we started out in the hobby. And do you want to kick that segment off a little bit, Chris?
Sure. Again, I really had no clue what was going on. And one of my first big mistakes was I was flying over here at Botler Park, which is right behind the airport,
mm-hmm.
flying the old, you know, AM radio, was it 27 megahertz or whatever mm-hmm. back then. And the plane, you know, now I know why, but back then I didn't know why. It would just be like, and it'd cut out for a little while, and then and it would come back, you know. And I just thought that's the way it was. But here, find out, you know, I'm probably less than a mile from the airport, I'd say.
Oh, wow.
Some conflicts going on there.
And the other thing was, you know, is a lot of people over there. And one time I got in trouble because I was trying to fly, and there was three little kids' soccer games going on. Well, the coach came over one time because the kids stopped.
They were distracted.
Watching me fly the airplane, he's like, I see you're having fun. The kids are really enjoying it, but you're kind of ruining the soccer game. I'm like, oh, okay, all right, I'm sorry.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I've had a lot of fun experiences over there. Another quick one is I flew the Super Cub, flew the J3, went out and bought the Ferocious Frankie. Do you remember that one?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
What's that? I don't know.
It was like an
aerobatic trainer, wasn't it?
No, it was one of Park Zone's first, like, real warbirds. It was the P-51, but it had, like, that funky foam, almost kind of like a Depron-type foam. Beautiful airplane. It was really before lipos. Had a geared brushed motor in it. And it was my first aileron, plane. And it was really windy that day, and I thought, man, I don't know. So I flew the Super Cub around, and finally I was like, that's it. I'm going for it. I don't really care. So it happened to be that day, the wind, to take off, to go into the wind, you had to go over the parking lot. So you had all the cars and all the people, and I was like, that's it. I'm going for it. So I chucked that thing, and it went up, and the wind was just going all over the place. So it was going back and forth, and it was going farther and farther. And I'm like, finally, I got to turn this thing around. I'm sweating, nervous, shaking on the sticks, And I started to turn around to try to bring it back to me, and I think a gust of wind came, and it just rolled the plane over. So I backed the throttle off. This thing's just going all over in the air. Well, there's cars everywhere. I'm screaming, get out of the way, get out of the way. People are looking at me like I'm crazy, I'm going, get out of the way. This plane came right down between two cars. Just missed it.
Oh, my gosh.
Hit the ground, exploded in the air, foam pieces everywhere, There's my little son. He just standing. I'm like, Aiden, hurry up. Gather up the pieces. We got to go.
Oh, wow.
So after that, it really took me a long time to try to fly around any people, any cars, anything. I was scared to death.
Yeah, that's a big beginner mistake.
Yes.
Flying. Yeah.
Yes.
Know your space.
Right.
Keep away from people.
Yes.
Just plan if something's going to go wrong, it will.
Exactly.
Especially when more people and kids are around.
Exactly.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, I was very fortunate that thing didn't go through somebody's back window of their car.
Yeah.
Oof.
So, Josh, do you have anything?
Yeah, I got a – well, do you want to do, like, mistakes from last week or back when I was – because I make them almost daily. Dave can attest to that.
We do stupid stuff.
We do a lot of crazy things.
How about the oldest one, then?
Okay, the oldest one.
Oldest and common mistakes.
Yeah, okay. Something, back in your beginner days.
Something other people can learn from.
Well, in the past, when I did fly and I was able to get up in the air, my first plan was Gentlelady, which I promptly would get about 30 seconds of flight out of it before I would bungee launch it through the trees. Back then, high start, we didn't have any – it was 049 that it would take. We didn't have one of those on it. And so my dad would high start me, and I would immediately panic, and I would see it right into the trees. Well, when there's still a rubber band that's pulling it attached to it, the more pieces break off, the faster it pulls it through the trees. And I really got a good education on learning how to not do something. And but we got past that, and this is where I think my main mistakes happened, where I ended up doing lots of searching was – I would let the wind carry my plane away. And rather than positioning myself where I was flying upwind, I would actually fly downwind because it's easier to fly downwind because the plane naturally wants to go downwind. Problem is after about three mistakes, your plane's a little speck in the sky. And now you not only have to fight yourself all the way back, but by that time you're also dealing with the dead battery and the plane getting farther and farther away. So a rule of thumb I would say is always fly upwind. Position yourself so when you're flying, you're always pushing into the wind. And if you do make a mistake, you're coming back towards you. And the do not pass line, I would say, would be level with you. Once you go past yourself, then your main focus is just simply to get it in front of you again. That was a very common mistake. Moving on just a little bit later is back then I had a Spectra. It was a Great Plains electric, very underpowered. I thought it was great at the time, but predominantly my whole arsenal was all gas and glow. And anywhere from 50 cc's to like the big two-stroke engines and everything. But I made a mistake one day of leaving my leather glove off, and it was just when the APC-style props were really kind of taking hold. Mm. Wooden props, they're all dull anyway. And I would oftentimes barehand prop those. But this time I couldn't find my leather glove. I got impatient. And I believe it was a Sukhoi on a two-stroke 90, which isn't really an overly big engine, but boy, it winds up.
Yeah, it winds up like crazy.
And that little – and keep in mind, I had, you know, G or Quadra 50s and things like that with spring starts. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wasn't intimidated with those engines, but I went to prop that, and it backfired on my bare hand. And it put a cut across my three fingers that was one of the most painful injuries I've ever had. It didn't even have to start. It was just that instant backbite cut right into my hand like butter. So what I'd learned off of that is sand the edges of your prop and always wear a leather glove whenever you're propping anything gas or glow. Chicken sticks, nothing chicken about it. I like chicken sticks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So now I'm holding my hands as I'm thinking about it.
I know, that's what I was
just the soft spots. But I've heard horror stories where people have lost fingers doing crazy stuff like that.
Yes.
And yeah, so always wear a leather glove. At least then you'll know where your fingers are.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I did something in the beginning, as most beginners do. I was way too impatient. I was just, I would fly in any type of weather, and I thought I could do it. It was just one time it was so ridiculously windy, and I had a flying wing, and I couldn't control it properly. I could fly around when it was calm, but I couldn't push the nose down yet. I hadn't learned when you're just flying around, you never push the nose down. You never need to, because you just back up the throttle and it drops or whatever. But this time I was out and I was behind a tree line, and it was actually quite calm. Flew around and went up, and it went up over the tree line, and it was right next to a lake, and that thing just took off like a rocket the other way. And I could not, as soon as I turned it around, I could not push the nose down enough. I didn't
think about it.
Yeah, I couldn't really fathom it. So every time you turn around, it would just push the nose up and flip it over, and it was just going. Every time I turn around, it just flip over, and it was probably 2 kilometers downwind before I finally just drove it into the ground. And it took a long time to find that, and it was completely destroyed. EPP wing, and it was probably going 100 kilometers straight down to the ground.
Oh.
And as usual with my luck, it was right on the only rock in the whole field. So it was completely destroyed. Same, I bought another airplane, same model and everything, taped it up, and it was really nice. And I bought the hub-up motor for it, a little bit hotter, 3,200 kV with a 475 by 475 prop. It's all like a rocket ship. And I threw it, and I flew it full throttle because it was so fast I just freaked out. And I just tried to correct it, and I didn't throttle back, and it was just going crazy, and the roll rate was absolutely insane on it. I had the recommended throws for the super high end crazy roll rate, and no expo, and it was just a rocket. And I'm like fighting it, not trying to get it into the ground. At that point, what I should have done is just throttle back and just let it go down. It would have been fine. But I tried to do everything, and I got it inverted, and it was like 2 feet off the deck, and it was going like 100 kilometers an hour straight into a pole. And it just cleaved it. First flight for that plane.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, okay, I need to back off a bit. So, I learned that. They call that don't fly with a broken thumb or like a cast thumb. So either full or nothing. I was just on full all the time. So that was kind of embarrassing. Yeah, hope someone learned something from it.
You know, Austin, you just got into it not long ago.
Yeah, I don't know that I've really made anything other than mistakes, so I don't know that I can really speak. I don't know that I can really speak intelligently about it, other than that. First time flying is just. It's pretty much all mistakes. So really, it's just a matter of like how badly you want to mess up. Because mistakes are part of the fun, honestly. I mean, it's part of just figuring it out. Is just doing some things that you didn't really know not to do, or just basically. I don't know if I can really give any advice on what to do, but just accept that mistakes are part of it and just have fun with it. The biggest thing is not making mistakes that are dangerous to you or anybody else. And just learning from them and not making the same ones.
If I could give a really top tip is do not be impatient.
Yes.
Because I've cut myself so many times just rushing through things. I had a Dremel and I needed to cut something because I could have just taken my time and taken the piece off the thing. But no. I have to cut it now. And the cutting discs end up in your finger and it's awkward when you're bleeding and you have to explain to your wife.
It's bad when wives know just to routinely pick up Band-Aids and Advil.
Yeah.
So.
And two, I think, like, how many times have you, like, you want to fly so bad, whether the weather's really crappy or whatever, and you're like, oh, I'm going for it. And then it just turns out disastrous. And you know in the back of your mind, you're like, I shouldn't have went. You know what I mean? So if you think you shouldn't go or it's a bad idea, don't do it.
Yeah, you can usually feel it beforehand.
Exactly.
If it's going to be good or not. Yeah. And as I said in a previous podcast, I learned flying on a Corona 120 electric helicopter with NiCad batteries. I flew through the winter and I was learning and it was great. And I flew in a little pocket where there's no air ever. Then first time I went out and flew where it was really windy, but the problem was only when it was really gusty, the wind would actually pick up and go over the building and come down. So I was just hovering and it was awesome. It's just normal. And then all of a sudden, a gust of wind hits and I have no idea what to do.
Right, exactly.
I've never felt anything. And it just took off right into my leg. It was so painful. It didn't break the skin or anything because I had a thick pair of pants on. But man, the whole leg was just blue. It hit me 3 or 4 times before the blades actually stopped or like they folded. It's a really cool design. They fold up. It's the Multiplex Funcopter.
Funcopter.
Oh,
Yeah, okay. Same design they bought, LHM Corona. But man, that was hurt. I can't even imagine like being hit by a 500 helicopter with carbon blades.
I don't even want to imagine this.
Yeah.
So that made you reconsider how close you fly to yourself?
Or yes. after that, you're like, nope, get away.
I'll land it 50 feet away and be happy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, stupid stuff we do. And it's all because you're impatient, usually.
Yeah. Or you just think, oh, I can do this. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
I got a real quick helicopter story. It's wintertime, really couldn't fly. I thought, you know what? I'm going to fly a helicopter. Went down, local hobby shop, picked up a helicopter, went home, was in the house, and it was an old Blade.
Is this the first time you flew a helicopter?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Oh, cool story. Go ahead.
So,
Wait, what size of Blade?
It was their
120?
Yeah, maybe their one.
Wow.
No,
400?
No, not that big.
Oh, okay.
Like 400 price, you know, like 20-inch rotor
blade.
The old E-Flight blade, the old one that they had.
Oh, Blade CP.
Yes, Blade CP, collective pitch. No twin rotor here. I went full collective pitch.
Yes.
Fired
inside
the house, in the living room. Nobody's home. I thought, oh, this is going to be fun. Fired this thing up, and I actually got, you know, a couple feet off the ground, was hovering around. You know, this thing's just gnarly, you know. And I was like, oh, this is great. As soon as I hit to go forward, this thing just took off and ricocheted off of every wall in the living room. Paint chips flying. I was just like, my wife is going to kill me.
Oh.
It was so bad. Just destroyed the helicopter. The whole head was in a million pieces. There was blade pieces everywhere. And I was like,
oh, man.
This isn't good.
Wow.
That was lucky that was your house instead of you.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was my first helicopter experience.
Wow.
Well, and like I mentioned, being a beginner, really anything I do is a mistake. But I think that goes for most beginners is that you're going to make a lot of mistakes. And I don't want to speak for Josh, but I know that, like, for example, Josh learning, you know, to fly helicopters and that sort of thing, that a simulator was key for that. And just kind of perfecting crashing outside of the real world is really cheap to really I know that was actually my very first investment, just kind of getting into RC just a little bit, was buying a simulator and a transmitter that hooked into my computer. And, you know, I have, you know, countless hours now. But, like, even flying in a simulator, though, what David was talking about with patience is really important, because flying 2 feet off the ground upside down in a simulator is very, very different than flying 2 feet off the ground upside down in real life.
Yes.
Because it's amazing how much different, you know, motors are and control surfaces are and wind is and just your own skill.
Well, your nerves, too.
And your nerves.
There's no reset
button. Yeah, I was going to say, there's no red button there.
Exactly. So, like, patience is huge. And just flying a simulator, learning the characteristics, and it'll save you a lot of money. It'll save you a lot of heartache.
Well, especially with helis and multi-rotors, a simulator is an amazing value.
Yeah.
It's just... Yeah, my bride got me a Blade CP Pro for Christmas, and that's like Wendy said, I worked on the simulator all through the winter. It's still, once I put it up into a hover, it was still so nerve-wracking and scary.
Yeah.
Because it was, at the time, the CP Pros were, what, $250?
Yeah.
And now you can buy for under $100 a heli that flies immensely better. But
yeah,
it was very nerve-wracking. So right on. You're absolutely right, Austin.
While we're on the topic of stupid mistakes, any building-related stupid things?
Oh, I got one.
Yeah, go.
I got one. I was addicted to big airplanes. I love the Senior Telemaster. Kit built the first one, and I love building so much, I scratch-built three after that. And I'm notoriously cheap, so I fell in love with scratch-building early because you can do a lot with a little. You can build huge airplanes very economically. I think about $30 in wood to build you a Telemaster.
Nice.
Well, I did this not once, but probably three different times. I would build a huge wing up in my bedroom, and you know the smell of glue and epoxy gets annoying, so you put the fan on. And I would take this finished wing, and I would lift it up off the building board, getting ready to show my dad, and immediately stick it into the fan that was running on the ceiling and just blow it apart. And I, like I said, I didn't do it once, but three times. And the other times was, if I got it past the fan, I'd be so excited to show my dad, I would go through the door with the wing wider, like standing wider than the actual door, and walk right through the wing. And I did that once at my bedroom, going to show my dad a plane, and then also once for a science fair project, I built a plane specially for it. And I went through school, and I was feeling all macho, and I walked right through that wing.
Oh.
So don't do that.
Wow. That's funny. Do you got any, Grace?
Yeah, I've got tons, but the one probably I think was the funniest, because I really knew better, was I was building an airplane. I don't even remember what it was. And I had my Radian sitting on the bench. No wings on, just a fuselage. And I had an old ESC or something. And I don't know whether I wanted to check the control throws or something. But anyway, I had the prop on it, which I shouldn't have. I plugged the battery in. And it was one of them older ESCs. The throttle was, you know, full on. The second I plugged that battery in, that thing took off right across my bench and it went right through my fuselage and my Radian and just cut it right in half. It's like, boom, right off each end of the I was like, what just happened? And I knew better. I'm like, Chris, you're so stupid, you know.
Yeah, I have a pretty good one with I was building the Multiplex Easy Star, and they recommend using accelerator and CA to glue the fuselage halves together. And that's a pretty big fuselage, and I was pretty new to the whole thing about gluing a large surface. Like, I didn't use any tape or anything. I didn't think about that. But it's a long, big surface. You add all the glue, and it stinks and all that. And so you spray the accelerator and all that. Squished down. It's like, oh, I have to hold it. Oh, it's sipping out. So I grabbed the accelerator and squirted right on where I held it.
Oh, man.
That was your chemical burn.
It was thin CA, and the whole hand was just covered in it. That pain is unbelievable.
That gets hot
and
quick.
I couldn't let go. I was glued to the stupid thing. So I'm just shaking it like crazy, up and down, and just screaming like a girl, running out and bouncing on the walls.
Oh.
And finally, the whole hand, and I didn't know about debonder. Uh-huh. I didn't know about anything. So it's just trying to take a knife and like cutting the fuselage, getting it, trying to get the fingers off, and then the whole hand just peeled the whole skin. It was pretty bad. So I never ever spray any accelerator at all anymore while I'm holding it. And there was that stupid aerosol can.
Oh yeah,
it's the squirt-on spray. It dries it in like 10 seconds. The aerosol spray cures it in a half a second. And it was, and it's like smoke coming off. It was great. good story, guys.
That's pretty intense.
It's honestly amazing our spouses actually let us be in this hobby.
And that we're alive is pretty
I think my wife, she just laughs at me all the time. Now I'm going to throw myself under the bus. Has anybody glued like the cap on the CA to their lips?
No. I can see how that works, though.
Chris is raising his hand for those that can't see.
I mean, you know, I must have had a little bit on the cap, and I was holding what I was gluing. I grabbed it with the other hand. I'm like, trying to get it. You know how they get kind of stuck. Soon as that thing popped up, I'm like, uh-oh, this is no good. Luckily, I did have some debonder, but I just kind of rubbed it around.
A quick tip, and I'm not going to throw anyone under the bus, my brother. he was in college working on an airplane, and a quick thing is with your X-Acto knives, put a zip tie on them or a pencil eraser. Because he was faithfully working one night on that, and from the story he told me, it rolled off the desk and gravity took hold, and when you're sitting down, just connect the math.
Yes.
It went straight through his nutsack.
Can you say that on podcast?
No, we can.
Wow. Yeah, it went into the...
He's testy.
Yeah, you're giving me pain. You know, the only saving grace is my brother doesn't listen to podcasts. I got an amazing, awesome brother, but he does have three amazing children, so nothing was permanently done.
Wow.
But, yeah.
That's brutal.
Yeah, you know, we'll have to put a clip of this up because David's in pain. But, yes, that is a serious thing. And also... Your legs, you got a nice meaty thing.
Yes.
You got a meat dartboard down below the table, so be careful.
I have done that.
So the tip is to put something around the X-Acto knife that's going to prevent it from rolling.
Exactly.
That's a great tip.
Exactly. So, yeah, don't do that. It's
still there's lots of things hurting right now just talking about it. Wow.
I don't know. I think they're going to have to bleep that out there. I was anticipating you getting so vulgar. But, yeah.
Honestly, that's a really honest and great tip, though. Yeah. So we have to thank your brother for bringing that to light.
I was the whole time. I was like, do I even bring this up? But,
that's great.
It's out there forever now.
Who knows how many generations of children that you saved from bringing that tip to light?
Crazy, crazy. All right, I think we've covered this because we're all in pain now. I don't want to talk more about injuries.
Yeah. So beginner mistakes, flying, building,
and the stabbing man part.
I want to thank everyone for being honest and real quick before we wrap this up, is there any other episode? We mentioned the vertical drag race episode. I know Chris is oftentimes, very, very often, behind the scenes helping and doing different things, advising. But vertical drag races is one episode you can find Chris in. Yeah, is there any other prominent episodes?
Falkner DR1 versus the SE5A.
Yes.
That was a blast.
Yes.
We went back to our video game days. Remember that?
Right.
That was fun.
That was a lot of fun. A
lot of carnage.
Any other episodes we can link up?
Actually, I think in the background, David go ahead.
The first one we ever did was a night episode.
Yes. You were the big nutball guy.
Yes. Yeah. And then... if you guys happen to watch it, at the very end, I had a small one at the very end where you guys were wrapping it up, and I flew that had, I think, red lights on it or something, and it was flying in the background as you guys were wrapping up.
Nice. Yes. Well, cool. We'll link those episodes up so that way you guys can kind of put a name to the face.
And also, the bomb drop episode, he is the person that cringes when I tip stall the huge Spitfire.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, for those of you that haven't seen those episodes or want to look for Chris on them, we'll link those up in the show notes. We actually have four segments for today's podcast. First one, we're going to be talking about some beginner mistakes for flying and for building and such. The next segment is going to be what's new in RC Tech. It's going to be a new segment we're going to be bringing to you guys. Third segment is what's new at Flight Test, and then the fourth, as usual, we're going to be doing our lightning round Q&A.
And also, we have an interview with Bill Blair.
Oh, yes, exactly. Yeah, we're also Bill Blair from WhirlyBirdVideo.com.
.com
is very, very recently visited Flight Test and shot an episode with us, shared a lot of his heli knowledge with us.
More importantly, he made prime rib. in a smoker.
16 pounds of it.
And it was phenomenal.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Never mind the fact that he bought a beautiful 500-size Hughes. No, no, it was bigger than that.
No,
was it 500?
The Hughes was 600.
Yeah. What size was the Magnum PI one? 600 was the Magnum PI one.
Yeah, and the 500 was the Huey.
Yeah, and look, I don't know when it's going to air, but he also we don't know a lot about helis. And he was really gracious to give us two great episodes off of that. So you can look for that in the future.
Yeah.
Actually, while we're talking about it, do we just want to roll the interview with Bill Blair?
Let's do it.
All right. So here we go. So we're here with Bill Blair from WhirlyBirdVideos.com,
and
right?
We became friends with Bill Blair when?
Joe Nall this year, 2013, down at Triple Tree Aerodrome.
That was pretty awesome.
It was great to see you guys down there. I posted some stuff, I think, on your forums, and I was like, you guys really need to go because the electronic flight line has really grown over the last two or three years down there.
And
I've been going since 2001, and the field opened there in 2000. Previous to that, it was actually at Pat Hartness's house. So,
oh, really?
It's really grown over the years. So, I mean, it's... I was like, you guys should really come because of the electric flight line. And I've never flown on the electric flight line until this year. I mean, I always stay on the helicopter flight line or the main flight line or visit the 3D line, but never really stop at the electric flight line because I just don't. But you guys were there, so we went down there, and I was like, well, we should go down there. It's going to be relaxing. You know, it's not high-dollar helicopters. It's not crazy 3D aerobatics. It's going to be just nice. And we get down there, and there's like, what? 13 airplanes in the air and 6 flight stations. I was like, holy moly, you know? This is not relaxing. This is chaos, but it was a lot of fun.
It was fun chaos.
I got to fly the first swappable for me when that was the Spitfire that you guys brought down.
You were part of the Pass the Transmitter. Your buddy was too, wasn't
he? Yeah, which was awesome. That was the first from him. He's been several times, never flown.
Oh, really?
And I got the biggest kick out of it because you guys are the controls right, and then you just threw the airplane. And you had no choice. I was like, this is awesome. I wish I had the camera.
He did good too.
So yeah, he did a great job, and I think that pushed him because he actually flew the rest of the week. So
your hospitality and your love, and also your gift of making meat awesome, is honestly what ruined us.
Yeah, we have to tell that story. We were actually we came to Joe Nall, and we didn't know many people there, right?
No. And actually, like you said, you were a big impact that brought us down there. The way you described it, it just sounded like we had to be there.
Yeah.
But we didn't really know the ropes at all, and it was kind of overwhelming. And then, Bill came down. Go ahead.
Bill came down, and he asked, do you want some food Friday? I can't remember which day it was, but day.
Thursday, I think.
Yeah. So he's like, come up to the electric flight line, and we'll heli flight line, sorry. Yeah, and we'll get you some food. And we're like, yeah, that sounds good. So we walked up, brought my tricopter and that, and we walked up to the heli flight line. Really nice crowd. And that I see this huge meatloaf wrapped in bacon, wrapped in love and cheese.
Well, with bacon inside, too.
you didn't know where the bacon stopped or started, but all you knew there was bacon in it and the cheese and the meat. And honestly, I'm getting hungry, and I'm happy – that Bill didn't only just come down, 350 miles?
Yeah, 360.
He didn't only just drive here, with him and some amazing helis we're going to look at later. He brought a smoker.
Yeah.
And honestly, you made me want to cry.
Well, it's just like, you don't leave your transmitter at home. You don't leave your smoker at home either. So,
an amazing cook.
Isn't that funny how, he gave us food, and now we needed him to come back to feed us again.
You guys look so poorly, though. And then Josh says all he brings is hot dog for you guys. So I'm like, we really got to feed him something other than hot dogs. So.
Well, the truth of the matter is, Dave, you'll agree, I'm cheap. I'm a cheapskate. And I knew this was the first time. So I'm like, okay, we're going to have cold cut sandwiches and hot dogs the whole time. And I didn't skimp on the Mountain Dew. I mean, I have my limits. But it was you saved us, honestly, because I think they would have killed me otherwise. And everyone just had a great time. And the love and hospitality of the heli flight line, not at all what I pictured heli guys to be like. You figure high energy, complicated machines, complicated people.
Yeah, no, it's not.
And we had an awesome time that the night flying and the hanging out with the people was awesome. But the reason why we brought you into this podcast was to talk about, you've been in this hobby for so long. When did you start and how did you start? And
yeah, I'm getting old. I'm 43.
43.
I have to count that up. But I counted before the podcast to make sure I remembered. But yeah, when I was about 6 or 7 years old, I remember going to my Uncle Don's house. And he was into model airplanes and generally got into helicopters when they first started coming around, I guess in the early 80s. But I remember going to the field specifically. And we went out to – they were still building the Madison Airport at the time. And they would let us fly out there because they were building the airport. So the Blacktop was there, but that was it. And we were flying, you know, whatever models it were. I think at the time he had a Kraft three-channel radio that was, you know, an AM transmitter that had three channels. And at least they were proportional, so it was at least that. But he had an aerial antenna that he would set up on his trunk and all that. But he quickly moved to a Futaba transmitter that was a six-channel that was like $600. And this is back in the, you know,
it used to be the rule of thumb for every channel you could get. It was about $100 a channel.
Yeah, that's about what it was. And he still has that radio. I was telling David earlier, he actually has it set up on his bench. Different batteries, of course, than what it originally came with. But if you go over to his house, he'll jerk it out and show you. This is one of my first transmitters. But
that's awesome.
I got into helicopters, and I'm into everything. I like everything. Boats, airplanes, helicopters, weird stuff like multi-rotor stuff. The first multi-rotor, I actually got your frame when you were in Sweden before you ever showed up to flight test.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I put one of those together.
Well, thank you
very
much. I just
fell in love with it. The original KK board, I guess, is what I used on there, and it was awesome. You had to flash it with the computer and all that.
Nice.
I got into helicopters, I guess, in the early 80s. My first helicopter was a 30, nitro-sized 30 helicopter. It was a Sluter Mini Boy. So it's like an all-aluminum frame. It's very expensive. My Uncle Don gave it to me because I didn't have the cash. I was, you know, going to high school at the time. So or I guess I was between high school and college, I guess, probably a senior, I guess, and started messing around with it. And, of course, we didn't even have gyros at that time. He had bought one, but he didn't give me one because they were really expensive. So I was still using my mixing in the radio to set up the 8 degrees of the tail rotor and get that mixing set up. So it was mostly all you did was hover because we didn't have simulators then. So we hovered, and then we would call it walking the dog, which is something totally different now in helicopters. They say walking the dog. But we'd come into a hover and then start forward flight really slow, and you would just follow the helicopter around. And that was learning how to fly. I mean, and you put wiffle balls on it and all that stuff. But eventually got a gyro that was a centrifugal gyro that had a little motor and a wheel that would spin up. And then intermittently, that little wheel motor would quit spinning and you would lose tail authority for a while.
Oh, that's fun.
So, yeah, it was neat. And, you know, I hovered probably 11 gallons of gas in one summer, learning how to hover good. And then the next summer started walking around it and finally got to where I could fly a little bit. And then simulators came out, and I was, you know, that's the best tool at all. You mentioned helicopters are expensive. Yes, it is a much more expensive hobby than playing with the foam planes.
Yeah. Yes.
But the simulator is the way to go. Buy a good simulator, start practicing,
and they really go from there. With helis on the simulator, they really have gotten it dialed in.
Yeah.
The feel, everything.
Yeah. You know, I guess the two big ones are Phoenix and Real Flight, and both of those now, the new versions of both of those work really well for helicopters.
So those mechanical gyros, how – like they had to weigh a ton.
They actually weren't really big, but, you know, if you look at the ones we have now, yes. Because, you know, they're smaller than a matchbox, the ones we have now. So this one was probably, I want to say, about 2 inches long, about an inch tall or something. You know, pretty good size square. But it was heavier than what we have now, but it was lighter than what you would really think.
Oh, really?
And they really worked pretty good for the time. You know, we didn't have MIMS gyros back then, you know.
Okay, so do you know exactly how the mechanical ones work? Like,
well, I know there's a wheel in there spinning around, and there's some contactors on that wheel that would, you know, kind of go back and tell it what to do.
But okay,
you're getting
so
a little too technical for me.
Okay, so it didn't really need the spinning thing was just a reference. It wasn't really driving the linkage or anything.
Right, right. Okay. You were still hooked up like you do a traditional tail gyro. You know, the servo went in and that went to the receiver. And
oh, cool.
So it worked really similar to the ones we use now. It's just it was
high-speed servos didn't really exist back then, did they?
Oh, no. You used regular servos. I mean, we went out and we tried to get fast ones, but, you know, I've pulled them off of airplanes before and put on there. But you didn't do nothing like we do now. I mean, you know, you didn't have a heading lock gyro. It just didn't exist when we first started doing.
Unreal.
So what after that, what kind of helicopters did you get into?
Well, I got out of it. Because
really?
It was so expensive.
Yeah,
you know,
I know,
and
right?
Crashing. So I kind of come back into airplanes. And I got once I got out of college and got a job, I said, I want some big airplanes. So I started down the big airplane path. And a friend of mine started a computer shop in town. And he said, oh, I've got this room in the back. If you wanted to do a hobby shop, we could do a hobby shop together. So, okay, let's jump into the hobby shop. So we did an online hobby business for about 6 years. And we did pretty well and was probably one of the larger ones out there at the time. And that funded my hobby. And so I really got into big helicopters and airplanes. That's kind of the end of the hobby shop days. Finally, I said, you know, this is like work, and I've got a real-time job anyway. So I sold the hobby shop and got out. And just in the last 3 years, got back into helicopters really big. Started out small in the little 450s, you know, flying those around because they were cheap, and then jumped into the big ones, and now we're flying, you know, 810-millimeter blades is really the one you want to fly because it flies better. But the 600 to me is one of my favorites. So a 600-sized helicopter is one of my favorite-sized helicopters to fly.
Now, you have some pretty serious helicopters. Like, you have a lot of helicopters and pretty serious machines. So,
yeah.
Like, for instance, which one is your favorite today? That you're flying.
Well, the new scale helicopter we're going to do the video on is probably my favorite because I really like scale helicopters, but I like the 3D aerobatics too. So, I mean, I've got a Compass 6HV, so it's a high voltage 600 from Compass, and that's one of my favorite electrics, I guess. And then I've got a Nitro helicopter from Synergy. It's the N5C, and I really like it. I got back in the Nitro. I went away, and I've got back into it because I want a little more flight time, and then I didn't really realize that the high-performance engines that they have now and use just about as much fuel as the batteries eat through the I don't really get any gain on the flight time, but it's neat, it's loud, you know, you hear the motor and stuff like that. So and then I like a Lion helicopters. I've got a couple of Lion helicopters, a couple 600s and a 700. So I've tried them all. I think the only thing I don't have is a Goblin, and I want to try one of those next, but maybe next summer.
In total, roughly how many helicopters do you think you
as long as my wife's not listening to this, probably about 7 or 8 helicopters flying right now.
Wow. That's a lot of maintenance.
It is, yes. Well, I've got friends that are actually full-scale helicopter pilot or maintenance folks.
Yeah.
And they tell me that it seems like it's equivalent amount of time I'm spending on maintaining the small ones as it is them for to do the maintenance on the bigger ones. But
you know, this is kind of a branch off, and we can do it quick. What would be one of the single most important things you'd recommend for someone getting into helis, as far as I know, the simulators are important.
Yeah.
But as far as we were just talking about maintenance, there's probably some really crucial things.
Oh, yeah. Don't go out and buy a $1,000 helicopter. Don't buy an $800 helicopter. Go out and, you know, I don't want to plug some names, but I guess I will. E-Flight is like the 130s. The 130X is awesome. That wouldn't be my first pick.
I think it's very durable.
But that would definitely be my second. The number one would probably be that Nano, the MCPX Nano. Is that the correct one? That one's awesome. It takes a beating. It flies really well. And if you can fly that, you can immediately go to a 500 or a 600.
Wow.
And then you're just like, wow, this thing flies really, really well. It's because you've jumped up in size, you know, in powers.
The bigger the disc area, the more is it gyroscopic? Or it just feels nicer.
It just feels nicer. I mean, just like in the airplanes, if you go out and you fly a 40-size airplane and you go fly a 40% size airplane, the 40%, it's like it just hangs around like a big kite. It, you know, it's baby. It flies great. So, I mean, it's the same way in helicopters. For the small helicopters are small, touchy, lightweight, where the big ones are more heavy, and they seem to be more stable, too. And, of course, the flybarless systems they have now are just off the hook. They're rock solid, and that tail just won't blow out. You can go backwards and forwards and up and down and bank and yank, and it stays right there. So
nice.
It's really come a long way.
Great thing about the small helis, too, I had some buddies that would just get an SR-120 from Horizon back when those were out.
Yeah.
And they didn't respect the fact those can still do a lot of damage.
Oh, yeah.
Those little MCPX, I've sadly run into myself a few times. Yeah. It hurts.
Yeah.
But it's not going to kill you. It's not going to open you up.
Sure.
Like a 120 or anything else. Right. So the safety, if you're going to, God forbid, get hurt,
right,
you're better off starting
with
that.
Yeah. I mean, you got to think the machine you're flying, right? I mean, a 600, even a 500 will hurt you. Even a 450.
Yeah.
Well, it hurts you really bad if you get hit. I mean, you're spinning carbon fiber blades at 2,000 RPM, and as you go down, you're going faster on your head speed. So, you know, a 450, I'm running a 450 with almost 3,000 RPM on the head, and it's a carbon fiber blade. That will hurt you. So, you know, be safe with it, and beginners should definitely start out on the smaller side and find a local club and go talk to the guys. Like you said, you know, every guy I've only met one bad guy, we'll leave his name out of this one, but most everybody I've always met are just generally really into the hobby, and they're willing and to share their information and just generally nice people. So, and that's a great way to start.
And the Heli Flightline was one of the most kind, laid back, friendly groups of people, and that really touched me. I was really amazed. Yeah. I've gone to a lot of different flying clubs, and I'm not talking about flying clubs. There's good and there's bad, but with the airplane flying clubs, I've never experienced that instant hospitality like the Heli Line did at Joe Knoll.
Yeah, well, they pushed that in every flight line, though. I mean, that was the big thing from the start when they started doing that flying was, you know, they wanted to be a laid-back, fun atmosphere, friendly, and that's they still push it to this day. If you talk to Pat Hartness, he'll tell you that's
great
the
guy.
Big thing to be – you know, be nice to people. And even if you have an issue, a safety issue, treat it in such a way that you don't have to yell at someone. You go up to them and tell them what they've done wrong, ask them to do it the correct way. And, you know, I've only seen one person been asked to quit flying their airplane, and it was noise. It wasn't safety. So,
wow.
Yeah. It's funny, as we're talking about helicopters, it's so far away from what we're doing. Like the cost of just one servo on the cyclic is more than the whole airplane with the transmitter sometimes.
It's definitely different, you know, but it's such a fun hobby, and it's so much different. I mean, you know, I fly airplanes for a while, and then I'll switch back to helicopters. And I have a lot of people say, well, it's a helicopter. It's got to be easier to fly because you can hover. And I'm like, the hardest thing you've ever tried to do in RC is to try to fly a helicopter.
Yeah.
You know, brother, I don't want to neglect one thing. You're a Whirlybird. Why don't we talk about that?
So I started Whirlybird. Actually, me and my brother-in-law was wanting to get into doing some commercial video for aerial footage. He works for Augusta National Golf Course. And, of course, if you work for a golf course and you want to film golf courses, Augusta National is where you want to go. That's where they have the Masters. So we thought, well, we can do this. So I went out and I bought a big gasser. I didn't know anything about it. I knew how helicopters, but that was it, you know. And I'm like, yeah, I've seen a lot of people do this, and it looks like they know how to operate cameras, but they don't know how to fly.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, you do the camera stuff. I'll do the helicopter stuff, and together we can do this. And then the FAA started talking about all the issues and things that they're going to be doing. So we kind of slowed down, and I was like, well, I really like the hobby. I think I've been doing it a while, and I've got some good thoughts and opinions. So I was like, well, I'll do product reviews. So that's where I kind of started down the product reviews. And my brother-in-law said, what do you mean? What are you talking about doing? And I said, well, check these guys out. So I go to Flight Test. And it was like, had to be one of your first videos. You guys first started doing it. So it was Josh and Josh.
Yeah.
And you guys were shooting. I remember seeing one of your camera rigs was like a rifle stock.
That would have been Eric's gun camera mount thing,
like,
yes.
That's cool. And I said, this is kind of what I want to do. So, you know, I'd been doing videos, but I hadn't done product reviews. And I really thought, well, I've got connections where I had the hobby shop. I've got salespeople that I'm used to dealing with. So I'll try to get a hold of them and get set up. And I've been able to get some discounts, been able to get some products. But most of it, I say a lot of times, this episode is sponsored by my MasterCard. So most of the times I'm buying the products that I'm reviewing. So.
You definitely speak with your heart and with your wallet. I mean, the fact that you're funding it yourself shows you have a love for the hobby, a love for the communicating to other people, getting them into the hobby successfully. So hats off to you, brother.
Yeah.
So how many videos have you done now?
On the new channel, I think we're a little bit above 60 now on the new channel. So the old channel, I don't even use it anymore. I actually do a few gun reviews. So I like to go out sports shooting and things. So that kind of pushes off to the other
America.
Channel. America, yeah. You don't have guns over there?
We shoot and we eat meat, man.
Yeah, well, that's how you get the meat. You shoot it.
There you go. So what's your website?
Whirlybirdvideo.com.
Very good.
So, yeah.
Don't go to whirlybird.com. You're not going to go there.
It's a different place, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a bad place or not. I don't know. I've never gone there before, but just go to whirlybirdvideo.com.
There you go.
So you're building your first swappable today.
Yeah, I'm building the FT Racer because I just loved that episode, and the paint scheme and stuff on the planes was awesome. So I was like, I got to build one of those.
That's awesome. That's great. And you brought your buddy down. Why don't we talk about your buddy real quick?
So yeah, but my buddy Greg, I've been flying with Greg for about 6 years now, and I trained him, so it's all my fault. And he's my camera guy. He's camera guy in training. training and he's learning. So hopefully he can pick up some good techniques from you guys up here this week. And
or some bad habits.
He loves to fly too. So he usually hangs out with me about every weekend at the field. So
that's fantastic. Well, brother, I can't tell you how much we appreciate getting to see you again. And we're going to be shooting a video right after this.
Yeah, so the scale helicopter.
Yes, and that's going to be great because we know nothing about helis of that capacity. Actually, we know very little about helis, period.
Yep.
So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. And I really thank you guys for inviting me to come down.
And truthfully, the other thing I look forward to is eating the meat later.
Yeah, we're going to do a big prime rib. We just bought 16 pounds.
Oh, man, that's going to be good.
It's
my
be
diet's going to go down the drain.
Yeah, by the way, anyone that hasn't seen David recently, David, how many pounds have you lost?
About 30 pounds so far.
I don't know how to say this appropriately, but the guy looks good. Yeah, I just took it to a whole nother people.
I'm leaving.
Well, I said, you know, I'm proud of you, David.
Yeah, thanks so much. We'll go back to the normal episode again. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Bill.
Thanks for having me.
That was a pretty cool episode. Thank you for coming out, Bill. That was really good. And thank you for the food.
I miss him already.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah, good stuff.
So, RC Tech time?
Yes, so we're going to have a new segment called What's New in RC Tech. So we have a couple of items to talk about. Very first, new tech from our sponsor, Hi-Tech.
Yes, we got a Hi-Tech Aurora 9X.
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's Josh's, actually.
I'm sorry.
Now you have a lot of transformers.
I am. God bless you guys, because you have given me the opportunity to play with a lot of toys, and the Hi-Tech Aurora 9X is amazing. That's going to go on all my multi-rotors because of the amazing feature of the telemetry built into the receiver.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
Oh, my goodness.
It just saves so much, because you never land
otherwise. I know.
Otherwise.
The Swede can testify that I have a problem. Either I get wrapped up in the moment, or I'm just not paying attention, but I keep flying. And I puff batteries, and I lose control. And multi-rotors just don't know how to rotate very well.
Not too well. No, I know.
No, but you can do it once. yeah, the 9X. And sadly, I haven't gotten too much time to play with it. I still got to transfer them over. But the features on it are just awesome.
Yeah, I have the normal Aurora 9. And a few things I can actually – it's here. I'm going to take it up and pick it up. And a few differences I can see. Actually, it looks almost the same.
A stylus in the back.
There's a stylus in the back.
Really good for my fat fingers.
You can actually, you can hear me playing with it in a very non-creepy way. the module on the back, it had a module, the old one. This does not. It's built in, so there's no wire on the back hanging out anymore. This also uses two processors, for one for the screen, and one for the radio unit itself.
And that helps with speed, right?
Yes, because a lot of people were complaining about the latency. Personally, I don't think you can feel the difference between the two, but yeah, it is crazy high resolution. It's 4096 resolution compared to 2000 before.
48, yeah.
And the latency is cut way down. It's I can't remember the number, but it's like four times as fast. It's crazy, but it's actually, it looks almost the same otherwise. It's a gray color to it, and it has blue sticks.
I love where all the sliders are too. The sliders are easy to reach, and I know this is the same on your old one, correct, Dave?
Yeah, it's the layout is the exact same. Yeah. It has a little bit more three position switches though.
Yeah.
But it's a nice radio. I like it a lot.
It's very intuitive. We had to bind it, and I didn't ever read their instructions or anything, but I was able to go through and just by reading the screens, figure out how to bind the model, and it bound really easy. And also, there's two communication types on it, too.
Yeah, you can change to the STL protocol,
yes,
which means you can bind it to the...
Tactic style, right?
Tactic or any link stuff.
Yes.
So,
wow.
The 1SQ, for instance, we bound up, and the Hadron we flew on it.
Oh, yes. Nice.
And just, I personally, it fits my hands just absolutely fantastic. That's why I like it so much, and the sticks feel good. It has the super nice gimbals.
I like how spiky the sticks are on the top, too. Now, you're a pincher, right?
I am a pincher, and they have a little lip on them. which makes it really nice to grip for me. But it's just perfect for my hand size. You actually, you enjoy an even bigger radio than this, right?
I have big hands. I love the DX18. And ironically, it's funny because I found the perfect radios for me on different aspects. That's definitely going on all my multi-rotors. I'm going to switch it over. The DX18, I'm going to fly on all my simple foams. I like the comfort of the big transmitters because, I mean, frankly, I got big hands. But the one I like the least is the Super 8. I fly the Super 8 on all my FPV planes, the Futaba Super 8.
Yeah, it's so tiny. It's so tiny. That is a great radio, too.
Oh, it is.
I love the feet. Personally, I don't like the scroll wheel or the iPod style type of thing.
Yeah.
I don't like that. But the features are phenomenal, and it's a light radio, which is why it's so popular for discus launch gliding.
Absolutely. And I do like where the sliders are on it, on the side, like the Aurora.
And they are very protected.
Yes. Yeah. I really like that. Nice. So that goes on all my FPV planes. My Twin Star, I'm flying with it. Right now, my multi-rotors, but that'll be on all my airplane FPV planes. So I'm going to try to segment
long range in that.
Yeah, because it's a great communication protocol. But
it's fantastic, and their chips are really high
sensitivity. I can't wait to spend more time with the high tech. I love doing the Hadron review flying. I was doing things and feeling so comfortable so quickly. A big part of it was the gimbals. The way the radio felt in your hand was so comfortable.
I felt really good flying into you, by the way.
Oh yeah, I'm sure you like that. By the way. We got a new tail surface because the Swedes.
Yeah, they sent us a new one. That was funny.
It was awesome. So, yeah.
That was awesome.
Thank you guys.
So, Chris, you got the new Mystique from eFlight, right?
Yes, I did.
The glider.
Yes.
3 meter glider, or how big is it?
Yeah, 2.9, I think. And actually, you come out and got to fly it too.
Yep.
So, what were your first impressions of it?
It flies like a Radian.
Yes.
A big Radian that penetrates a little bit better, and it whistles.
Yes.
Gorgeous. You can actually hear it?
Yes.
It whistles.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, even as it's just cruising around, it kind of whistles.
Oh, yeah, nice. It does. It flies fantastic, I have to say. I was surprised how well it flew and how nice it looks. The price isn't too bad either.
I think the price is phenomenal. I mean, for what you're getting, you know, to buy something like that in that size, that quality, you're looking at $700-$800.
Yeah.
You know, and for what you're getting. And I was really impressed with it. And again, I'm not, you know, I'm just kind of learning or getting into the thermaling. So, and I know everybody kind of knows your views on the Radian Pro because mine's the one you flew and didn't like.
Yep.
But for me, thermaling, this is just my opinion. To go to a full house, for me, it wasn't – I felt like I had to do too much work. You know, you're up there, you're using all your different settings and, you know, your reflex and your camber and you're cruising around. I didn't like it, where I'd find myself going right back to the Radian, chuck it up 400 or 500 feet, lay down in the grass, and let it do its thing.
Soaring should be simple.
I think so, yeah. I mean, that's for me. And with this new Mystique, the RES version, it's like David said, it's just like a big Radian. A little bit more power, which is really nice, but you get it up there and just let it do its thing, and, you know, it's great.
But you have to control it a little bit more because it has more speed, therefore you have to, if you want to stay in something, you
Correct.
Have to control it a little bit more.
Correct.
And you had some troubles with the linkage on it, though.
Yeah, a little bit. And I was on the forums reading, too, some other people. It wasn't really a big deal. It's actually, the plane is built so well that everything has such tight tolerances that the metal linkages, they have to be, according to the manual, I can't remember the exact, but like if it said the linkages have to be 58 millimeters or whatever, they have to be 58 millimeters. If it's a little farther or a little, you know, under that, it physically would not work inside the wing for the spoilers.
Oh, there was the spoilers that they didn't close far enough or didn't open.
No matter what you did, I tried bending them a little bit, and like if you went one way, they wouldn't close. If you went the other way, they wouldn't open. So I don't know. My problem was the rods were a little bit too long. So all I did was take the locking nuts off, and I took the clevises and wound them into the proper length, and everything was fine. I had no problems.
Nice.
So the plane, I love it. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, How much was it? How much did you pay?
I think here at our local shop, it was like $350.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that with or without a motor?
No motor. You have to have your own servos, motor, ESC, and battery.
So it's a plug and fly.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
So, David, rumor has it that for flight test, you might have ordered something interesting from Hobby King.
Yeah.
What might that be?
He's doing the creepy face again. Yeah. I had a meeting about this, David.
May I tell the story?
Yes, tell
the
story.
We'll start with once upon a time. Things are better that way.
Once upon a time, I woke up early in the morning. In the morning, I eat my porridge, and I sit at my computer and I check my normal stuff. Well, one of the things include HobbyKing.com new items, and I saw Pulse Jet, and I'm like, Chad. I called Chad. Or actually, I sent a message. Chad, we need to buy this. He said, yes. So I ordered it.
Yes,
straight
we do.
Off. Yeah, so that's on the way. We have no idea what to put it on. Maybe the Warlock.
They don't know what the Warlock is.
That's that brings us right into the next segment, which is what's new at Flight Test.
That's true.
I don't know, I want to talk about Pulse Jets more.
Real quick, I just want to thank High Tech for sponsoring that segment of what's new in tech. If you're interested in sponsoring the Flight Test podcast, just email me, austin@flighttest.com. High Tech actually sent us the 9X before they even considered sponsoring the podcast. Actually, in episode 3... we had Sean Spiker from High Tech on the podcast, and they liked it so much. They were interested in supporting that. So if you're interested, email me. And on to the next segment. What's new in Flight Test?
Yeah. Can I just throw in a Pulse Jet? We never explain what the Pulse Jet is.
Yes. It's very important to understand what a Pulse Jet is and what it doesn't do, more importantly.
Yeah. So... it's like a jet engine.
It's a rocket. Sorry. Did I spike there?
A little bit.
Okay.
So it's like a jet engine, but it's like the cheap man's rocket engine.
It's like a jet engine that just likes to run full throttle and never turn off.
Yeah. It can only go, it's either full on or full off. There is no in between. And how it works is it's a tube and it's resonating. Like if you roll down the window of your car and you hear that that is the same principle. It sucks in air and then it ignites that air with the fuel. It's sucking in air and fuel mixture. Then it because it's so hot and you get the perfect mixture, it ignites again. When it ignites, it sucks more air because it's just a tube. It's just a perfectly sized tube, more or less, that every time it goes bang, that gas is being pushed out the back.
Nature hates a vacuum, so it has to put in more air.
And it just keeps on going, but you cannot regulate it. It's full on, full off, but it's so awesome because it's incredibly loud. When I say incredibly, it is so ridiculously loud, and it doesn't sound like anything else. It's like, it's just like all the time.
It's safe to say we won't be flying this to the compound.
No,
so,
we won't.
So what are we going to zip tie it to?
And we were thinking about, that's why the new segment. We actually have an episode coming out about a flying toaster.
Are you allowed saying that? It may be bleeped out right now. Depends on what the saying is. A flying...
a flying something that makes toast.
And spread butter and jam on it.
Yes.
So, that was Chad Kapper's idea. And he wanted the old... what do you call that? After Dark screensaver with the flying toasters. Flying toaster
in the air.
So if you search for that, so we made and this is your first take on the dihedral,
gull wing.
Yes.
And Chad, it's so funny. He comes in, he's like, David, you make the toaster, make toast. Josh, you make it fly. And then he walks out. Yes. And he goes, I'll be back to see what you do. So David, being the genius he is, he's figuring out all these awesome ways to power the toaster. And, brother, you really put a lot of heart in that thing. You have, like, six cells. And
yeah, it was awesome.
Oh, my goodness. Well, the toaster's getting heavier, and I'm like, I don't want to just – because we actually did proof of concept to make sure the toaster would be lifted off the Kraken.
Yep.
And it was, like, nothing. So yeah. I was like, okay, we have some room to work with. So I wanted to take my energy and put it towards something that actually looked like flapping wings. Which yeah. also would couple with hopefully a way to make the future inverted gull wing for a Corsair, because so many people have asked for the Corsair.
Yeah.
So took that thing and yeah, the you can actually see the Warlock wing being tested and failed on our Flight Test Gremlin channel.
Right.
And
so yeah, if you search
the secret channel,
the yes. secret channel, you which
find
you
it
can
if you
find
look.
If you search for it.
Yes. So that's that. But I think that would fit a pulse jet pretty good and surprisingly robust.
Yeah, you actually made a small version mm-hmm. To try out. So we might glass that and put the pulse jet on it.
Most importantly, it looks really cool.
Yes. So it doesn't look like anything normal.
It's a flying wing, which looks – has the cracks inverted. It's crazy. Yeah. It doesn't look like anything
it
else.
It looks kind of like – almost you could take one end and take it towards like World War II German crazy engineering, or go all the way towards space age, or just – apocalyptic looking, so
yeah, it's pretty crazy. Yeah.
We'll see what it can turn into, but
yeah.
Can I ask, will it really make toast yet?
Yes, we already shot the episode.
Oh,
yes,
we've said too much.
Yeah,
Chad, this is episode's not going to even exist. Chad's going to get wind that we're talking about this,
and it's going to all be cut.
So.
We got to move along before we say too much, which we already have.
Yeah, we're in trouble now.
The toaster actually makes toast, but if it works in the air, I won't tell you.
That's enough.
Mm-hmm.
That's enough.
All right. So what else is new?
That's a good question. Well, we have just supposedly got back from Horizon Indoor.
Yes, we're recording this before the Horizon Indoor.
Ooh, just before.
I can give something that's going to be released afterwards.
The FT Speedstar.
Yes.
Old Speedster.
We've had a lot of requests to release the old Fogey as a speedboat kit.
Yes.
And I'm old so Fogey. Excited. The old Fogey, if you guys haven't seen, there's an episode I'm sure Austin can link to.
Yes, I will
but
link to that.
Very, very simple, rather large old timer, kind of common to what my dad used to fly, like a whole bunch of planes, Buzzard Bombshell, Brooklyn Dodger, and a Powerhouse all smashed into one. And it was fun. We released it last year at JR and did a video down there.
That thing was a hit down there.
Oh, it was a blast. And it's so slow and easy to fly.
It's but a lovely flying plane.
We don't want to just release it and have a soft release with it. We want it to have a friend. So we took – I had a mid-wing design that we went ahead and finished that off. And it's going to be called the FT Old Speedster. And it's a mid-low wing design that's equally as slow – kind of common to or thrown back to the 30s racers.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing I'm so excited is
the wheel pants.
The wheel pants. There are wheel pants, my friends. And they are the big, crazy wheel pants that you'd see on like the Mr. Mulligan and
awesome.
The GB and everything. And that, a matter of fact, we're going to release both the old Fogey and the old Speedster at the same time, and they're both going to have wheel pants on them.
Yeah.
And the wheel pants actually make the old Fogey fly even better.
Wow.
Which makes me really excited, so... That's the plug.
Something new, yeah.
That is exciting. And I have to say, it does look really cool. Yeah, it looks really nice flying.
It's fun to fly.
Oh, seen it out my office window a couple of times.
The Wing Rock, with going mid-mount, there are some separate issues. We'll let the episode show those. But the Wing Rock on the old Speedster is non-existent.
Yeah,
it's
pretty awesome.
Because of the way it's built. So
nice.
All right, moving on.
Two last items at What's New at Flight Test. We are planning on doing another open house at some point.
Yes, we just need to sit down, everyone, and take a date. But we pushed the other one a little bit because Josh moved into a new house.
Yes.
That is true.
Yes. I've been – when we decided to go full-time with Flight Test, we liquidated everything. And we sold our home and everything just to make sure that I could take care of the family. So I finally got an opportunity to buy a house, and God's good. We have a beautiful home that we get to move into, and we are in the process of doing that now. So because of that, everyone has to wait now for the open house because I was busy painting walls and moving furniture.
Whenever it is, we are going to give more notice than last time.
Yes.
So last time we gave like 3 days notice.
I'm going to say that we're going to try to.
Okay, that's fair. We're going to try to give more notice. Well, it's not hard to beat because I think last time we gave like 3 or 4 days notice. Yeah. And it was like, hey, we're having it.
And guys, you amaze me. The gentlemen and actually for that matter, young ladies that came out to the open house, it truly touched our heart. We had people from Canada, from
awesome.
New Jersey, that's from crazy. Buffalo, New York. God bless you guys. You guys are just amazing.
And we realize that not everyone that would like to make it, no matter how much notice we get or give, can't make it to the open house. So we have made as part of some new things that are coming to YouTube, we've also made a Google Plus page for Flight Test. Ooh. And we would like to do a Google Hangout soon.
Yeah, wouldn't that be cool to have that like live show? We got this product. Hey, let's go out and fly it. And have people tell us what they want to see, what they want to hear.
You can do that?
Oh, that is awesome.
That's possible?
That is plausible.
Wow.
Most importantly, we'll do it if people want it to happen. So if you can, go to the podcast icon on flighttest.com. Go to episode 5, leave us a comment, and let us know if that's something you're interested in. But we would love to do a Google Plus Hangout. And like David mentioned, has some cool things embedded in that with like a new product or something exciting.
Yeah.
We'll make it cool. Trust us. But we got to make sure you want it first.
Yes.
So,
I don't know if we talked about this. There's one last thing that's coming. The challenge video that's been like how many months?
The glider challenge?
Yes.
It's actually, when you listen to this, it was last Monday.
It's in the can and out on the tubes.
Yes.
It's out on the tubes. Yeah, actually, Dave is uploading it as we speak.
Right now.
Lovely.
So, check it out. It's pretty funny.
It is pretty awesome.
For awesome epic gliders action. Yeah. Check it out.
And there may or may not be a speedboat kit. We'll see.
We'll see. Mm-hmm. Depends on people who want it.
Well, we definitely want to respect your guys' time and keep this podcast at a reasonable length. Actually, our last podcast was like almost 2 hours.
Yeah.
Oh, and without a doubt, it's been our most popular podcast. We're not sure what to do with that information. But
make them longer, obviously.
Make them longer. I mean, let's go for 3.
Yeah, so lightning round.
Yes, we're going for a lightning round. And I think for today, for a couple questions, we're going to give a little bit of an exception to the lightning just because I think they deserve good answers. So we're going to try to answer them efficiently, but not necessarily one-word answers.
Have we ever answered something quick?
I know. I'm not sure why I'm giving this qualification. But so anyway, for a couple of these, I'll vote that we answer at our own pace, but try to do them quickly. But anyway, if you think that there's another question we should answer or something like that, feel free to go to Podcast 5, the show notes on flighttest.com. Let us know. But the very, very first question is from Sean Spiker at High Tech. Good friend of ours.
Awesome guy.
He has asked us, are we going to do a mustache contest for Movember?
What? Wait a minute. I got to ask. This seems kind of rigged. David Vinistel, can you even grow a mustache?
I do not know. I
don't know.
I've yet to do it.
Oh, my.
Is this a challenge?
Is there a hormone therapy that will cause Swedish people to grow mustaches?
I'll sign up.
Okay.
Are we going to do this? I'll challenge you to grow the most awesome mustache that you can and the whole November.
Wait a minute. I thought this is like loser grows.
No. The one that has the best mustache.
By the end of November. November 1st to November, whenever the end of November is.
This can go seriously wrong so quick.
30 days of mustache.
A mustache or beard?
Mustache. Just mustache.
I think it's just mustache.
We can make it whatever we want.
You know what?
Okay, do you want to do beard and then just show it, shave it just for the photo?
I'll tell you what. I will commit only if I can go. Oh my god! You don't pose this without proper counsel with wives. Honestly, you don't do that.
My wife is in Sweden. It's awesome.
All right. Here's what I will say. I will grow. Just let it grow free. In full face, and then last minute I will shave it to a creepy mustache for the competition. But
see who has the best mustache at the end.
In all honesty,
we let the audience decide.
Yeah, in all honesty, I can't just grow a mustache and walk around because kids will be scared, parents, cops will be called. I look like a really bad man.
You just moved into a new house. You can't afford the reputation.
Your neighbors might not come around.
Right.
I got a great relationship with the neighbors. We'll cover that whole story on another podcast.
There you go.
But yeah, the neighbors right now, they're awesome. So I don't want to scare them.
Yeah.
Game on. Yes. Mustache contest. As long as I can grow the beard, shave it last minute, we're good.
Flight test mustaches coming to a channel near you.
For moving.
All right. Next question is.
Where no shaving is allowed.
What is the process for designing FT planes?
Okay, Josh, do you want to take a stab at it?
Okay.
We have different, slightly different philosophies. Yes.
Yeah, the sad thing is I draw a pretty picture on the computer, and I do it in 3D. And if it feels right, I love origami, and I put the dimensions to it and fold up together. But I start with a top view and a side profile view, and I move things around that seem proportionally right. Now, if you guys know, I love cartoon planes. I love planes that are inspired from other planes that may not exist or maybe back in, you know, the 30s and everything. So I'll draw what I think looks cool, and then I'll make it fold together.
So you don't do CAD software, a 3D view?
No, I use Corel Draw 6, I put the spacing in by hand. There's no 3D arc.
Which
drawing.
Is a vector program made for making illustrations.
Yes.
Not necessarily airplanes.
Yeah. but basically, God bless Chad, because he started off early on and he's like, here's Corel Draw. He goes, you wanna make it work? Design something. And he gave me an opportunity to start with it, and I'm grateful for that every day because I love designing planes. But it's a gut feeling. I don't have any ear. So,
you also you also design them with blinding frequency.
Oh, my wife laughs at me because when I'm sitting on the couch, I love just drawing something up. And if you get an idea, it's just like, well, people that paint and everything do that. You know,
yeah,
if they get something that kind of itches them or they see something that inspires them, you don't have to try to design at all. You draw what seems cool, and then you add a little bit more. Also, I'm not going to act like I make up original designs. A lot of it is inspiration from you guys. A lot of it's inspiration from aviation out there already, and I just simply put my twist on it.
Sure.
The FT Old Speedster. I love the old 30s designed airplanes, and I wanted something that made it look like a flying cartoon version of it. There's nothing original about that.
So as soon as you made the drawing, you cut it out,
mm-hmm.
and then what?
I cut it out, I assemble it, and I put it in the air. The one thing it has to do is with all the swappables, and for that matter, any plane I design, it has to use previous techniques. I don't want people having to have all new techniques for building these. That way, theoretically, if they're following along the swappable line, or for that matter, just any of our scratch builds, an A-fold's an A-fold, a B-fold's a B-fold. If there's a new technique, you can only add one or two new techniques to that new build. It can't be all custom stuff.
It's reasonable.
It has to be common parts. It has to be cheap and economical to build. Can't be anything that and I'm saying this and I feel so bad because the great people that are across the pond can't get foam board very well. But I'm understanding that that's changing quickly, that there's other materials out there. But it has to be out of cheap materials, and it has to fold together. I love the fact that the paper-backed material, that you can use that and you don't have to try to line the side cheeks up. That paper membrane keeps everything in alignment and makes it so much easier.
Yeah.
And can I just say, like, I've been very fortunate to be able to test some of your stuff that you've made. And guys, let me tell you, I don't know how he does it. He'll say, here, try this. And you fly it and you're like, this is crazy, amazing. Like, how long have you been? It's just my second design. It's pretty good, don't you think? It needs a few. I just don't understand how he does it. It's amazing.
It's a prodigy.
I mean, it's crazy. The guy's got talent. I mean, don't let him fool you. He's got a lot of talent, he's really good at it.
Well, friends, honestly, the one thing I can say is please don't hesitate to try to make your own airplanes, design your own airplanes. I'm a very simple, jacked-up individual. If I can design planes, you can too. And I am blessed with amazingly talented people. I got people like Chris. Dave, how many times do I throw the controls in your hand and say, does this rudder feel right? Especially with the FT Simple Soar. That ended up competition where I wanted to make sure it felt good where you liked it. So I got a lot of really great people around that can give me honest input. Chad loves his flat turns.
Yes,
first thing you do, you put any airplane in Chad's hand, he just jacks on the rudder. He wants to see a skidding rudder turn with no tip stall. And frankly, some planes just can't do that.
Right.
But no, it's a blast. And you know, the more you do it, the more you love it. I love designing and building every bit as much as flying.
Same here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, David, very quickly, what's your process for designing an airplane?
It's funny. It's the same as Josh, more or less. But I use Adobe Illustrator instead. which is the same thing.
Right, right.
Someday we'll learn 3D.
Unconventional means to airplanes.
Yeah, so it's pretty straightforward. You think all the stuff I've read, and just and then you just try and put that into your design and then see if it works. Yeah. That's more or less it.
Hey, you know, it works. So
it actually
would be great someday to maybe have a flight test video episode on designing an airplane.
That'd be
kind of fun.
I think a lot of people would be like, what are you doing?
It would probably honestly scare them a little bit. It's like, that's all they do.
Maybe it wouldn't be the most popular episode, but maybe the people would reach it would be fun too.
That Spitfire, everybody I've handed that Spitfire to has just been like, this thing is amazing. I mean, just totally amazing. Everybody loves it. It is crazy.
Probably the best four-channel scratch build trainer out there.
Yes, I agree.
But it's funny. It was an accident. I designed a Spitfire that I thought the way it should look like, and I just I did the same idea you had with the
The FT Cruiser.
FT Cruiser.
Yeah, you took the wings and kind of stretched it.
Yeah, I stretched, moved it around a bit. I got a slightly different airfoil, and I exaggerated the undercambered wingtips, what I thought was the best idea ever, and it just worked perfect.
Yes, yeah.
It was just pure luck, like most of the stuff we do.
His airfoil, I love it. Also, the Warlock. I took the system because the airfoils I had the turbulators, far too many, and that the geometry just wasn't consistent. You couldn't repeatably fold it together. But the airfoil from the Spitfire with the two simple brakes where you have three total angles is perfect for more complicated builds that you can repeat and do.
It is very simple.
Yeah. Simple
is good.
And
the dihedral, it really helps it too.
Oh, yeah. And the outer undercamber tips, you'll see that on so many designs because it just makes sense.
Yeah, right. It does. So next lightning quiz.
Yes. We're going to fly through a few more just because, most importantly, my battery is getting low on my computer. So we're just going to fly through a few. Next one is, can you guys talk about some tips for indoor flying, especially for the upcoming winter season? As we mentioned before, we're going to the Horizon Hobby indoor event in Columbus. Is that correct?
Yes.
What's some indoor tips, guys?
Chris, go.
Generally, you want something kind of small and light, and most places don't want you to fly anything over a pound. So that's one little tip.
Nice. One suggestion I would have is different venues like the Horizon. I think it's called Horizon Indoor now.
Correct.
You can fly fast or slow planes. The faster your airplane, the more you want to focus ahead of it. Mm. The slower the airplane, you can concentrate more on it. But as you're flying, the faster you go, you want to see what's going on ahead. And if you just tunnel vision lock on your plane, and this goes for outside, but it's really prevalent inside, you want to see if a pole's coming up or the end's coming up. So generally, when I'm looking at a plane, I'm kind of focusing the nose section and then looking ahead of it aggressively.
My top tip is if you go to indoor venue, be prepared to crash your plane. That's a great tip.
Or have somebody crash into your plane.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's actually how we met our great employee.
Alex Zavada.
Yes.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, he is one of the coolest guys. I flew through his – he was flying a Micro Beast. I was flying a monstrous nutball. I think it was like about a 36-inch round nutball with a big DT-750 on it.
That's a tiny little plane.
Technically, I think it was still under a pound, but I don't think there's anything left. I think he's actually bringing the pieces in to put on our wall of memories. But I chomped that thing, and there was nothing left. I came out. I was like, I'm so sorry that happened, and I don't know what to do. There's no, like, can I help you fix it? Because there's nothing to fix. He was like, it's okay, man. That's all cool. No worries. And that, if anyone knows and has seen Alex, that's him. He's just like, that's okay. No worries.
Coming full circle, he'll probably be flying at Horizon Hobby Indoor.
With a flight test shirt on.
Less than a week, yeah, and working for flight tests. That's cool. So, David, this question's for you. I realize this could be an hour-long question, but I guess this is for Josh and as well. But I'm curious, nervous about what will happen when our favorite Swede returns home. As we all know, that David will be returning back to Sweden in, is it April?
April, end of April, yeah. My visa is up.
Gotcha. So he's got to go home. He's a pretty integral part of flight test, and so I would like to know more about what happens when he goes home. So, Josh, David, go.
Yeah, I don't know, really. We haven't figured that out. We're in the middle of flight test is in a total. We try to organize, but it's just general chaos, which we try to control because there's so many things going on at the same time. So we have no idea what's going to happen. Hopefully we'll figure something out where I can participate from Sweden, something. We'll see a bit, but we don't have it figured out at this point. No.
Well, one thing I can share is my mindset is you can't replace great people and you can't replace friends. And David is definitely both of them, near and dear to our hearts on both levels. So it's not going to be a matter of ever trying to replace someone that frankly isn't replaceable. I truly hope we have an opportunity to keep them in our lives personally and also through Flight Test. We'll see what doors opens. It seems like the great thing about Flight Test is things come through at the right time and the right reasons.
Yeah. So I'm actually training Alex Zavada to fly the tricopter.
He's doing great.
Yeah, he is. He did his first real following an airplane today, actually. Yeah. So he's coming along really good. I'm trying to teach him everything I can.
So basically, we got to figure out how you can get a transmitter to come all the way over here, and we can just chuck it in the air for you.
Yeah,
that
so
would
we
be awesome.
Developing new technology. Yeah.
So I don't think it's the end of a relationship. It's just going to be a different kind of relationship. And we truly wish you all the best in anything you do.
And the great thing about podcasting is it's extremely easy to have long-distance guests.
Yes, so probably I will be on the podcast if you guys do it early in the morning.
There you go.
Because otherwise this is in the middle of the night.
Right. But, I mean, ultimately, I know Flight Test, we're all about entertaining, educating, and elevating the world of flight. And that will continue regardless. And we'll, you know, be involving David, obviously, as much as we can.
I think there's going to be lots of great people that come in these doors, go out these doors. But they're all going to stay family.
Exactly.
So next question.
Next question is, will there ever be an FT float plane? And there is a qualifier here, not just floats on a plane, but an actual hydroplane, like an FT Hydro.
Yeah, floats on a plane, yes. I know he said not, but those are coming. The old Fogey and the Speedster will be able to do that. And also future planes coming down to that size.
That'd be very cool.
Looking at actually having a kit made out of foam board, crazy enough. As far as the float plane, yes. Just a sneak preview, what I'm working on or designing is I don't want to just go off. I love the Polaris. It's an awesome, stable design.
Yes.
Everyone has knocked it off. And I don't want to do that. I love history. I want to go back into the 1920s and 30s and go off the flying halls with the pod. And I want to try to make it a swappable or a simple firewall mount so you can choose. But where it's a flying hall, classic vintage look, and the power pod will actually be above it in the form of an big inline engine.
Oh,
nice.
Wow.
So there's a lot of different planes. It's going to be a cartoon version. I can't copy the scale features on the planes I'm looking at, but I just love those old flying halls. They basically took a boat, and it's like, let's put a wing and a tail and a big motor over top of the cockpit.
Yeah. Yes.
Right.
And I think that's the perfect thing to be a flying plane or a flying float plane for flight tests. So I'm not sure when it'll come out. I haven't truthfully gotten it past a 3-view.
Fair enough. This next question, this actually might be a better question for Chris to answer just because he's David, Josh, and I are...
We're biased.
We're FTHQ every day, so maybe we have a little built-in bias. But the question is, why do you think Flight Test has become as successful as it is?
My opinion is I don't think I have ever just, whether hanging around with the guys or being at a shoot or building something, that these guys are not having a good time. It's always a good time. It's always fun. And I think that shows through the videos and through anything they do, whether it's tips or events that they go to or anything. Just hanging out with the guys, it's just so much fun. And I think that spreads out through the community and they see how awesome they really are.
No chunks.
Yeah. Oh, stop it.
Give me a moment while I contain myself.
That's a good answer, I think, is that it's just a lot of times when we release an episode or whatnot, I mean, obviously there's a topic of the episode. And this is also coming from myself, which a perspective, I'm not really in the video episodes, so I kind of have a similar perspective as Chris. But it really is. I mean, we try to focus on, I mean, just having a great time. And whatever the topic is or whatever, you know, I talked about it before, entertaining, educating, elevating. It's also about having a great time with other people. And like Josh talks about, having shoulder time with friends and family.
Right.
And just it's really hard just not to watch an episode of Flight Test, and I watch them at work and have a smile on your
face.
I mean, it's
like I said earlier, I could have the worst day at work and I could come hang out with the guys or be at a shoot or even watch a video, and it makes my whole day. It's great.
Well, on a personal level, Flight Test wouldn't even be here without the people.
That's very true, yeah.
The one thing that just blows my mind and warms my heart about this great hobby, so many great people want to share their knowledge and share their experience to help other people. That's not too common in this world, and I'm so grateful. And this hobby is perfect for building relationships through flight, and I love it for that aspect. But without the people giving feedback, asking or saying what they want, but also being kind and good to each other, Flight Test wouldn't exist. So thank you, guys. And thank you, Chris. You're a big part of that.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I didn't intend that for it to be that, but I think that was a great wrap-up question. We did have a few more questions to answer, but I think that's a good note to kind of leave things on.
We're all weepy.
Yeah, exactly. I have tears running down my face. So we just want to thank, once again, our sponsor, High Tech, for just really taking a leap of faith and being the very first one to sponsor a podcast.
Thank you for the Aurora 9X, guys. And I love it.
Yes, that was very, very kind to send that to us.
Fight it from the Swede's hands.
Exactly, yeah. And just want to thank all the listeners out there. We're at about, I believe, very close to 40,000 downloads the Flight Test podcast.
Please go and rate the podcast on iTunes if you have the ability.
Yes, if you're able to, that really helps somebody new find the podcast, and we really appreciate that. You can easily go do that at flighttest.com/iTunes. iTunes is probably one of the biggest podcasting directories, so we really appreciate people that are willing to do that. I think there's probably maybe 60 reviews there now, and a lot of them are really kind, so we appreciate those. So, am I missing anything, guys?
I think we're pretty good.
Oh, also, something interesting Josh just reminded me of. Very, very soon, I can't say exactly when.
It's being beta tested.
It's being beta tested as we speak, is the Flight Test content app.
Yes.
Anybody,
it makes life easy for us people that aren't very technologically advanced like
me. It's true. We have some pretty surprising data. Well, just overall, just of how much content people consume on the go, on their cell phones or on their tablets. And so we have listened to that feedback, and we're creating a pretty cool app that will allow people to consume that content mobile, just the show and the podcast and the articles. It'll be really, really cool, and I'm really excited about it. So look for more announcements about that. And also, we also have a Flight Test Insider, which is a newsletter that we send out. Right now it's once a month, and you can sign up for that by going to flighttest.com/newsletter.
A lot of good stuff there.
So I think that's enough plugs.
Plugged every hole.
Want to thank everyone for listening.
Yeah, thank you, Chris, for coming out too, man.
Yes,
really appreciate it.
I can do this again. I love it.
We would really appreciate it. So
awesome.
Thank you, everyone. We'll catch you next time.
See you next time.
Bye.